truth is stranger than fiction. Wah, ha, 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 ha,
kind of is.
This is The Brain, and you're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Yes!
There is nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009. I'm, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me once again, almost sort of as always, is David Draper. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello, sir. How are you? I mean, I know we had this conversation, but I mean, I feel obligated.
You have the conversation off air, but then you have to let the listeners know in the middle.
You gotta make the listeners pretend like this is an actual normal flow of conversation, and that we're we're actually really friends and we know each other. But we just it's like that old, like, you turn around and you go, "Oh, why, hello there! I didn't see you come in with your camera equipment and your lights." Remember what they used to do in the old.
Yeah, absolutely. And people that listened to episode 66 or / order 66 of this podcast back in November will have heard Dave and I talk about Star Wars episode 3, The Revenge of the Sith. And I think I told that story then, and I'll tell it again here because you haven't been on well into episode. Well, whatever. Anyway, Dave and I, yes, we are actually friends. Yes, we have talked to each other over the last decade or so or more. We actually almost got to meet each other like two different times. Never happened, but one of these days.
One of these days.
So, Dave.
I felt bad about the second one.
It's okay.
The first one was there was other people involved and there was an agenda. And I don't think I knew you were there. Like, you just assumed that I knew the layout of that town. And it's like, I don't know. I was just doing what I was told.
It's okay.
That's how it goes in my relationships. I do what I'm told. Occasionally I am rewarded, so you know.
So Dave, what the heck are we talking about today?
Well, you know, Mike, you've been talking about you were going to do another show about the 30th anniversary of Robin Hood Men in Tights. It's the 30th anniversary. And I thought, well, you know, it's also the 30th anniversary of another movie that came out in 1993 that was based on a book. And it was adapted by a very well-known Hollywood legend, and it actually went on to have several sequels. And it's about the genetic recreation of dinosaurs. And of course, I am talking about Carnosaur by Roger Corman, the classic film based on the book, the 1984 book, which I actually own. I don't have it in front of me. I can't remember who wrote it, but it's a riveting tale about a madman, or in the movie, Louise Fletcher, who re-engineers the recreates the dinosaurs through genetic engineering, and chaos ensues. This is a real book, and it's a real movie. People know about the movie. It's a bizarre movie, but it is in fact a real book that came out in 1984, long before Jurassic Park. I actually own it. Of course I own it. I picked it up at the grocery store probably in 1984. Like, back then you could get like books off a spinner rack.
Yep.
I was just killing time when my mom did the shopping, and it was like, ooh, dinosaur related. And it's this trashy little book about this chaos in this small. In the book, it's set in England, and in the movies, set in America. And it is, like, you almost would think it's not the same story, but it kind of is. I mean, they really changed a lot about it. But no, of course, we're talking about Jurassic Park, which is also 30 years old. It's kind of interesting that Connoisseur came out right around the same time as Jurassic Park. It's weird. It's one of those crazy Hollywood coincidences, you think. You know, like how The Asylum always gets movies out right around with the same kind of theme as, like, you know, big Hollywood blockbusters.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Batman movie coming out the same time as an Iron Man movie 15 years ago.
I never really realized that.
Yep.
Batman came out the same year as Iron Man?
Okay, well.
Batman Begins?
No, Batman Begins was 2005. 2008 was Iron Man and The Dark Knight. Iron Man was May 2nd, and Dark Knight was in July, I believe.
I wonder if that's a little more coincidency.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
As opposed to, like, The Island doing, like, Transmorphatrons the same year a Transformers movie comes out. I mean, you know.
Yes, but Jurassic Park is also 30 years old, as we seem to be celebrating things 30 years old. at the end of 2023 here, Inside Studio 2009.
Well, 1993 was the last year they had any good movies. So, you know.
Come on now.
Then it officially became the 90s, and it all went to hell.
All right. Slightly off topic, what is your least favorite movie from the 90s?
Oh, God. I honestly couldn't tell you because I don't, like, the only 90s movies I, 90s was kind of a weird dark time for me where okay. I didn't really go to see. Oh, you know what? It was The Horse Whisperer.
I have a story about that.
and second place is Waiting to Exhale. I got dragged to a couple of movies I did not want to go see in the 90s.
Yes, Jurassic Park. I was 1993.
And I think Sam Neill's in. Isn't Sam Neill in The Horse Whisperer? He's the guy that the wife cheats.
Yeah, he played.
He plays the nice guy, the good husband, who basically gets totally dissed because he's not Robert Redford. Yeah, I love that movie. It's a great movie.
Did you ever read the book?
No, there was no equal. Oh, wow. 1998. Good God.
Yeah. 1998. Yep. 25 years ago or 20. No, 30. Whatever.
Scarlett Johansson was the girl.
Yes, she was. Yes.
Holy crap.
Yep.
It was Sam Neill.
Yeah, it was Sam Neill.
Poor Sam Neill.
Yeah, we're going to get into all that. We're going to get into the cast and everything else. But Jurassic Park, I have to tell you. I was 13 years old at this time. Fast forward, June 9th, 1993, I was just, or June 11th technically was the wider release, but whatever, June of 93. I was ripped from my home in Massachusetts and transported to Kentucky. And it was a whole other world. I was not into dinosaurs anymore. I was 13 years old, and I was just didn't care about a damn thing at the time. So Christmas of 92, I got a Super Nintendo, and I played it and played it and played it and played it and played it until my birthday, February of 93. I finally got my own actual, this is years in the making, Game Boy, the original Game Boy. And yes, I know it came out way before 1993, but I finally got my own Game Boy for my 13th birthday. Oh, by the way, because your mom had a nervous breakdown because she found out that her boyfriend of almost 10 years actually has another wife and two stepdaughters in Canada and whatever else. So your mom just went nuts. My dad comes up from Kentucky.
Jurassic Park, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, well, it's going to tie in, damn it.
When dinosaurs rule the world.
I am an old dinosaur, don't you know? My dad comes up from Kentucky. Blah, 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 custody, blah, blah, blah. I end up in Kentucky. I'm thinking, oh, my God, Kentucky. All they have is cows, country music, and tobacco, which is pretty much true, 1993. So, yeah, I was way past my dinosaur phase when this movie came out. I had no interest. The trailer scared the shit out of me at the time, and I have never seen it until just about 3 hours ago.
To Jurassic Park.
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
The most phenomenal discovery of our time.
How'd you do this?
Becomes the greatest adventure of all time.
Can I touch it?
Sure.
Universal Pictures presents.
You feel that?
Hold on to your butts.
A Steven Spielberg film.
Fences are failing all over the park.
Yeah, that's nice. Gotta go.
An adventure.
Look out! No!
I can't get Jurassic Park back online.
65 million years in the making. Jurassic Park.
And I'm legitimately, I saw your post about that on Facebook. And no, but I didn't say anything because I'm legitimately interested in what you think of the movie.
I like it. I think it's a good movie. I just, it's not.
Well, you know, it's sort of like the same thing. Like, I had friends who didn't watch Mandalorian when it first started. Mm-hmm. And then they went back and rewatched it. And like, I don't get what the fuss is about. And it's like, yeah, because you already know about Baby Grogu. You know, you already know. But it's spoiled for you. Like it's at some point, you know, part of hype is that surprise, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, wow. And with Jurassic Park, it was you've had 30 years of CGI. And mm-hmm. I mean, there was CGI before Jurassic Park. There was Last Starfighter. There was Young Sherlock Holmes. But that almost seamless blending, and that's the thing they don't do anymore. Like they've forgotten that half of that was practical stuff. That there was an actual T-Rex on set. That there were actual, you know, and that it was just when they needed the dinosaurs to move. So it was like they would have this giant practical thing that would establish that it has like space and weight and a real physical presence, and then it would move. And because our eyes weren't trained for that yet, like you're like, oh my god, this is amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and you've had 30 years of Transformers and, you know, just everything else. You know, CGI is so overdone now. Our eyes are so used to it. It's like blue screen. Like in 1978, blue screen was amazing when they did the first Superman. You know, and 100%. Now your eyes see it because you know what it is. It's you're used to it. But I think that was a big part of the film was that just nobody had seen anything like this before.
Right.
Like CJ, that was like that the animals looked real. And, you know, you're kind of seeing it, you know, in a way, in an interesting, valid way, more for the movie itself rather than the, you know, the spectacle, the wonder, the shock. It's like you're watching it as a movie probably on a TV, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw it like opening night. I've seen it a couple other times. I just saw it when they did the 30th anniversary re-release. I saw it with Jason. I've got a picture of us at the poster.
Nice.
There's a thing where they like go around the country and they will remove the musical soundtrack from movies and they have the local symphony orchestra play, you know, play the soundtrack live. And I did that for Jurassic Park a couple years ago. So, I mean, I've seen it on the big screen many times.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, why are you such a big fan of this movie?
You know, it's funny. It's not one of my favorite movies.
Okay.
No, it's not, because I think the movie itself is flawed. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, you know, if you watch a lot of like, I would say Transformers movies or Godzilla movies, you kind of know the drill. There's a lot of humans sitting around talking, and then occasionally there's the cool bits. You know what I mean? Like, and I think the cool bits are amazing in Jurassic Park. Like if I did like a top 10 movie sequences,
right.
Like at least two of them would be from Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
But like I never grew out of that dinosaur phase. I've always loved dinosaurs. When I was a little kid in Durham, North Carolina, there was this world-class children's museum. Did I tell the story when we did the Jurassic Park toy?
Probably.
I'll tell it again. So I was like 4 years old, and they had a class on dinosaurs, and my mom took me in. And the lady who taught the class was like, well, this is more for 6 and 7 year olds, a little bit older. We're really worried because he's 4. Is he going to get bored? Is he going to cause trouble? And my mom's like, just let him stay for one class. And if he's a problem, if he causes problems, I'll never bother you again. I swear. And my mom came back and she was like, how did he behave? And they're like, he could teach this class. Like I was that kid. I was the kid. I was like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes. I was that kid who's super obsessed with dinosaurs. It never went away. I remember the book came out in 1990.
Yep.
And I remember reading an article about how there, before it even came out, there was the bidding war for the movie. And I forget all the names that were dropped. I remember Danny Elfman was one of the names, but every studio fought for it. And of course, Universal got it and Spielberg got it. And like my entire college career, because that was 90 was my sophomore year. And unfortunately, that book came out right before my midterms, which ended up being very bad because I made a, I don't know the way my life worked out. Okay.
Right.
I'm okay with my choices looking back. Counting down to that movie was a big, especially my senior year. My senior year did not go well. And I had a lot of emotional problems.
Okay.
And one of the things that really sort of kept me focused was getting to that movie. And that's always been kind of the way in my life. It's always like something that I focus on that's like a goal, and they're like movies and comic books. Comic books for a while were like my monthly Scheherazade. You know, the story of Scheherazade is she keeps dragging the story out, so you've got to keep coming back. That's what comic books were for a while. And Jurassic Park was something to hold on to when everything else was falling apart. And like to this day, when we get to the Brachiosaur, this is not gonna make me sound cool or masculine, but I cry every time, because the first time I saw it, it was like this, you know, it's up on the big screen and it looks alive. And it was like, I have lived to see this day. I've lived to see this beautiful thing. And of course, John Williams doesn't help one fucking bit, because that music is amazing and
yeah,
and inspirational. And it lifts you up, but it makes you feel like you've gone to heaven. And it's also like Hawaii is beautiful. Like Spielberg made the right call not to like actually film on location. He was like, you know what? I'm old. Let's just film in Hawaii. But it's gorgeous. Like everything about that sequence. Like I said, that's one of the two sequences that I love. And I will just watch that sequence over and over again. It's called Arrival to the Island. From everything from when they get to the island, they land, they drive out, they see the Brachiosaur, and there's a couple of you never say the name, Parasolophosaurus is in the background. But it's just, it, like, if that was a real thing, I would sell what I had to sell, get the money and go. I would go in a minute. I don't care how dangerous it would be. Like, because that is a, I've always been obsessed with dinosaurs. I've always loved them. And just to see one, and just for that one moment to believe that I'm seeing something I thought I would never see, was just hit me like a ton of bricks. And again, call it, the senior year had been rough. So, you know, there were maybe one or two times where I wasn't sure I was going to get to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it moves me every time. And like, it's because it's weird, because I was never a big fan of the sauropods when I was a kid. Okay. You know, I was like T-Rex, like, rah, you know, T-Rex and all that. But like now that Brachiosaur, that's my baby. I love her. Like I do. She's my baby and I'm happy every time I see her.
I assume you're talking about the toy version you have.
No. I'm talking about in the movie. Whenever
I see this.
It took forever. Like Kenner, curse Kenner for all eternity. Like they never did a proper Brachiosaur toy. Like they did a little baby one that came with Tim Murphy.
Right.
And they did for Jurassic Park 3, I think they did a weird, not to scale with anything, Brachiosaur, but they never did a scale Brachiosaur toy for Jurassic Park.
Interesting. Nope.
They did a big model that I never got because it was a model and I'm untalented.
Mm-hmm.
But nope, there was never a Brachiosaur toy. There was, I think every other, I don't know if they did a Parasolophosaurus. I've got, actually at this point, I have everything for the original Jurassic Park toy line, like every dinosaur, every figure, the playset, and every vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is I'm not 100% sure I have all the accessories for every figure, but I mean, I've got like everything else. And they didn't do a Brachiosaur. They did all the mainstream ones, or all they did all the carnivores. They did the Triceratops, and they did like a Stegosaurus, even though he doesn't show up until the next film. he doesn't. And in fact, that's a big thing. Like the screenwriter specifically said, you know, like it was a goal of his. It was his favorite dinosaur, and he was kind of bummed that didn't show up. But he made that like the second dinosaur you see in Lost World is a Stegosaurus. The first one are the compies.
Yeah,
that's interesting because like for this podcast, I reread the book, which I hadn't reread in a while, and it is interesting to me how much stuff from the original book ends up in the second movie, because Crichton didn't really do a lot of sequels, but he actually wrote a sequel to Jurassic Park, which is sort of what they adapted for Lost World. It's actually very different, but the premise is kind of, you know, they use the same premise of Site B.
Yeah.
But a lot of stuff in Lost World, the movie, is from Jurassic Park. The little girl being attacked on the beach, the waterfall sequence is from Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple others. It's interesting how different the book is from the movie. Like, it's interesting who lives and who dies. You know, Hammond dies in the book. Arnold still dies in the book kind of the same way, but they actually show it happening. Gennaro, the lawyer, lives. Muldoon lives. Well, Gennaro is actually a much more important character in the book. He's very different. He's not like a cowardly little weasel. And then there's a guy that's not in the movie that gets killed by the T-Rex. And that's kind of a cool sequence. Cause like it's the little T-Rex. There are two T-Rex in the book, and the little one is like playing with this guy like a cat. And like he's just freaking out, and it's just like knocking him down and playing with him and just almost toying with him. It's almost cute until they get to the part where like Grant hears his high-pitched scream because he got bored.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah, this movie was, oh boy. Yeah. It's not something I disliked. I was enjoying watching it. I was enjoying the experience of experiencing the film, and it reminded me, you know, you talk about the CGI that's in this when the dinosaurs move, but it also reminded me about some of the practical effects that there are some movies now that they're trying to bring practical effects back, but I mean, we've been in the digital CGI age for 15 and a half or
longer. 30 years, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. And it's just one of those things where I was like, oh, that's cool. Or, oh, that's cool. I think the only, I'm one of those people that I don't do. I know Jurassic Park is not a horror movie, but I don't do horror movies because I don't do the jump scare. Like, oh shit, what the hell was, like, you know, like, oh my God, that, like, nope.
I mean, I'm not a big horror movie fan either. I like monster movies, but I don't like, you know, dude in the hockey mask. Makes mincemeat of teenagers. I'm not into that.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where, in some of the, because I only tagged you in one post, because I know some people on Facebook, and I'm just speaking generally here, just some people, like, they just don't. But I made other posts after I tagged you in the first one with various screenshots as I'm watching the movie. And half the time, when I know something creepy is going to creep me out that pops up, and it's really not that creepy, it's just the way I am, I will just immediately turn. I can still hear it, but I will turn my head the other way so I don't have to see. So the biggest scene for me, that gate, like, literally, I almost jumped out of my chair, and I forget the name of the dinosaur. It's when, and we'll talk about him, his acting and his character in this, but when Wayne Knight's character.
Okay, Nedry, gets, yeah.
Yeah, when Nedry.
The Dilophosaurus.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I was just looking, but all the pictures that are shown in the Wikipedia article don't show the way that the dinosaur opens its
dinosaur did not have a frill.
Okay. So that was okay.
Yeah, okay, quick story.
Okay.
So the Dilophosaurus in real life is about 10 feet tall. Okay. And the Velociraptor is much smaller. But because they wanted the Velociraptors to be like the big bad guys of the film, they made them bigger. And then they were like, okay, well, that's kind of the same size as Dilophosaurus. And most predatory dinosaurs kind of look the same. I mean, they have the same body type. So they shrunk the Dilophosaurus down. So the Dilophosaurus is much smaller than it's supposed to be. And then they added that weird frill that's actually, like, there's a lizard that has that kind of frill.
Yeah.
But I think they did that to give it, like, a rattlesnake quality.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I'm about to do poison.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the Dilophosaurus in the movie is almost a completely fictitious animal.
Okay, well, yeah.
They weren't really poisonous, you know.
Well, that's what I was wondering as I'm like, okay, so I get that. So that whole scene, just kind of jumping ahead to the scene, and I'll talk about Wayne Knight here in a minute.
Well, everybody knows about that scene. I mean, in the film knows about that scene.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, we're not spoiling anything. Anyone that's
It's a 30-year-old movie, okay? Wayne Knight dies.
But, like, so he's crashed his Jeep because he's not the full-on bad guy of the film, but he's
kind of is.
Well, I thought and it kind of broke my heart a little bit. I thought B.D. Wong, a.k.a. Dr. Wu. Yeah, well, Dr. Wu.
Dr. Wu, it's weird. As the series goes on, they suddenly reinvent him as an evil genius. Although the final film goes back and makes him this kind of, like, they try to redeem him, and it's weird. It's weird that they made him an evil genius, and it's weird that they made him, like, this pathetic, broken old guy in the last one. Like, he's just a scientist in the first film.
Okay.
He's just the guy that does the work.
Okay. Because I looked at that, and I looked up who, I was like, oh my God, that's B.D. Wong. That's Law and Order. You know, Father of the Bride. That's like, oh my God, like, how could he be a villain? And you're right, he's not really a villain. And yes, you are right, Wayne Knight
he's barely in it. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like,
well, the real villain is a character named Dogson.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. Like, I don't know how much we want to get into this, but they brought his character back for the last Jurassic World film, but they recast because the actor got in trouble. Like he had stuff on his hard drive that he should not have on his hard drive.
Right. Okay. Yep. I don't even know who Cameron Thor is, but
he's a guy who has things on his hard drive that he should not.
Yes, absolutely. But like, I recognize the name of the character.
Well, that's because it's a famous bit in the movie where he's like acting all like spy like, and Ned Reed's like, Dodson, we got Dodson here.
Oh, that's but I'm saying like, I've never, and looking at his filmography. So Dodson.
Well, it's a bit part. I mean, come on.
Well, no, I know.
But, like, you know, Paul Newman or somebody from that role.
No. Well, he was the Mater D in 1991's Curly Sue. He was Ron, whoever the hell Ron was, in 1991's Hook, also a Steven Spielberg movie.
It was Ron. Were you watching that movie at all? People at the time are like, why is this movie called Hook when it's the Ron's movie? It's Ron. Everyone's going, Ron, mm-hmm. and Rufio, but Ron.
Yep.
I mean, apparently he was a guy who, you know, directors have people they like to work with.
Absolutely.
What I'm saying is he was probably one of those guys, you know, until.
Yeah, until. But, like, even up until, I'd never heard his name before, ever.
He was a bit part guy.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's why I love, like it's, because, again, I think we as fans find our bit part guy. You know, we find our that guy. Like, my guy, well, now he's a little bit bigger, but, like, Clancy Brown has always been my, that you know, the guy that was always, like, had, like, small roles in movies and then was always happy to see him, you know?
Yep, 100%. But, between Shawshank. And
well, Highlander, Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah. Right, yeah. But really where he shines is that velvety voice of his as Lex Luthor in Superman, the animated series.
Yes, exactly.
I love Clancy. So, the cast in this is just, it's lock, stock, and barrel. It's everything between Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, which I finally understand the stupid Dr. Ian Malcolm memes everywhere. Yay. Richard Attenborough, Bob Peck, Martin Ferraro, as I've said, B.D. Wong, Wayne Knight. So the thing with Wayne Knight, I made the post on Facebook and I said, it doesn't matter if he's playing Nedry or if he's playing Newman or if he's playing, I left out Stan Podolak from Space Jam because Stan's just a dumb publicist in that movie. Or what was the third thing? I don't know. I compared something else.
I don't know. But you didn't tag me, so I haven't seen them.
Yeah, it's okay. I said, like, between, like, three different things, I'm like, oh, Wayne Knight is always playing the bad guy. And then I looked at, for some odd reason, I looked at his birth date, and I'm like, holy crap. Wayne Knight is the same age as my father. Wayne Knight was born in 1955. Oh, my God. Wayne Knight could have been my dad. He wasn't, thank God. But, like,
Thank God? He's got Seinfeld rerun money.
That's true. Yeah. But, But no, yeah, the movie itself, I really dug it. So some of the questions here, as far as like, we've kind of covered the history of the film and stuff like that. Dave saw it in theaters. I didn't. When was the last time you watched this?
I mean, it was only a couple of years ago, like at the concert. It was shortly before COVID.
Okay.
And I remember because we stayed through because, you know, it's the orchestra. So they're playing the final credit music. And I remember thinking it was weird because like the credit sequence was so short.
Yeah.
Like we're so used to like 9 minutes of credits to get to the end credit bit.
Yeah.
That like and it was so quick. And considering the technical, you know, considering the technical stuff that went into that film, it's kind of really shocking.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I've seen it. I saw it like a couple weeks ago or whatever, and then I saw it like just a couple years ago. So,
yeah, absolutely. I walked away not disappointed. I walked away with this is what I love about films. So I'll mention really quickly because everybody should know already, but This franchise has two trilogies to it. It has Jurassic Park, Lost World, and Jurassic Park 3 as the first trilogy. And then the World trilogy is World, World Fallen Kingdom, and World Dominion. So this franchise has six films to it already. And the last one was only last year. Wow.
Yep.
I didn't even realize. I thought Dominion was at least 2021. Wow. Huh. Interesting.
Well, World, I think, was 2015. So...
World was 15, Fallen Kingdom was 18, and then Dominion was last year in 22. But I don't know, man. Time just me and my time displacement is a whole other podcast episode. But looking at this, I'm just like, this film alone, not that I don't want to watch the others, but I really have no interest in watching the others. This is what I miss nowadays. If you had just adapted the first book and just had the film that we had that got released June 11th, 1993, as we've said before in the Star Wars episode we've done already and other things, beginning, middle, and end. This movie has everything. It doesn't leave you with, oh my God, what's next?
No.
And that was the coolest thing about growing up 70s, 80s, 90s, like right before the internet, because we didn't know. Like nobody knew if there were, I mean, unless, you know, Michael Crichton or Steven Spielberg or whoever went on Good Morning America or whatever, Entertainment Tonight, and said, hey, there's going to be another one, blah, blah, blah. We didn't know. And that's the thing I miss about films, and I've said this before, is just having a self-contained story. And that's what I really enjoyed about this. I went into this kind of like, okay, what am I getting into? I had the jumpy parts at at first I thought isn't it the T-Rex that pushes the Jeep around where Sam Neill's character and the kid and the girl have
yes.
to, okay, yeah. So it's the T-Rex. He's pushing the Jeep around. I'm like, oh, he's kind of like a little dog, even though he's going to end up eating them if he catches them. But as he's pushing the Jeep around, I'm like, oh, it's like a little dog with a toy. I just really enjoyed it. It's probably not something I'm going to go back to, but as a film experience, and this is why I only did, I think, two or three posts on Facebook as, you know, kind of like not stopping moments, but like the moment when they first enter the park and they go through the doors and the sign. So there's that. The moment when Newman, Nedry, escapes the park. There's that. And there's like, I think the moment where the T-Rex, right before he eats the lawyer. Yeah. Oh, that outhouse really went to shit, didn't it?
Oh yeah. Well, they actually, for San Diego Comic-Con, Mattel has a toy license. They made the outhouse.
Oh, they made the outhouse.
Made the outhouse with the lawyer. That was the only way to get the lawyer.
That's amazing. I know. I know our good favorite Funko company has a pop moment of the Jeep being split in half or something.
Being crushed, yeah.
Yeah, being crushed. But yeah, no, it was it wasn't as I didn't go into it thinking, oh God, I'm not gonna watch this movie, really? Like, God, I don't wanna watch this. And then I forgot how good Sam Neill is. I mean, I've always known how good he is and other things that I'll go through his filmography here in a little bit, but between him and Laura Dern, they were great. Goldblum just steals the show.
Well, it's weird because he had a career before Jurassic Park.
Yep.
So it's weird to say that this film made him, mm-hmm. but I do think it kind of redefined him.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of the bug-eyed nerd before Jurassic Park. And then, like, because the weird thing is, like, he almost became, like you're talking about the meme. He's mm-hmm. kind of a sex symbol, which
yep.
I still don't quite get, but like, you know, like he's sitting there with his shirt off and I'm like, it's Jeff Goldblum.
Yep.
And the girl's like, yeah, he's hot. And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did steal the movie. I agree. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, very, very good. Oh, God, I think the first – I don't even remember him in the film, but I think just reading through his filmography, I think the first film I ever saw him in was Earth Girls Are Easy from 1980.
My first was Transylvania 65,000, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw the Looney Tunes adaptation of that.
Okay.
Yeah, Looney Tunes did a Transylvania thing. But yeah, I mean, and Goldblum, yeah, you are absolutely right. Looking before Jurassic Park and after
Jurassic Park, his big film was The Fly.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And, yeah, after Jurassic Park, I mean, he was in one of my absolute favorites that we may have to, I don't know if it's something you'd want to do, but we may have to cover this.
Independence Day?
No. Oh. Well, we can cover that. That's fine. But, Dean Koontz's Hideaway. I read that book in 1990, whatever. I forget when the book came out. And then I realized there was a movie. Anytime at that time in the 90s when I realized that Dean Koontz's movies were going to be transformed into books, there's Hideaway.
You mean the other way around, right?
Books
turned into movies.
Book.
I was a big fan of Watchers, and then I wasn't a fan of the movie, and then I really love Phantoms, and I never saw the movie. So,
yeah, the only two that I remember are Hideaway and Mr. Murder, and Mr. Murder stars probably I don't know how people feel about various ones of these brothers, but. What are you going to say to me when I tell you it's Stephen Baldwin?
I don't know, some people are weird
about the Baldwin brothers, so
I think I know Alec catches a lot of flack, but I think he's a good actor. Like when he wants to be, he's a good actor, but
Yeah, but Goldblum's career, man, between movies and television, he just like exploded on the scene.
I think the 90s he had like a flirtation with being kind of the leading man, which was, you know, probably not his arc before then.
No, not really. And then television, he took over. He didn't take over. He became a ongoing from 2009 to 2010, right before it ended. He became Detective Zach Nichols in Law and Order: Criminal Intent. Gorin and Eames were off doing other things or whatever at the time, so they brought him into that. So I love watching those seasons of Criminal Intent. And then in 2021, he was the voice of the Grandmaster in Marvel's What If animated series. Holy crap.
Well, that's because he played the Grandmaster in Thor Ragnarok.
In Thor Ragnarok, yeah. Yeah, he has an impressive career, and every time he pops up, whether it's a meme or whether it's in real life or whether he has a series on, I forget what, is it on Hulu?
It's on Disney. He had a series on Disney. I know that.
Jeff Goldblum Explores the World or something or
something
other.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I watched the Ben and Jerry's episode. I loved it because I love Ben and Jerry's, but that's a whole other thing. Jurassic Park, folks, dinosaurs and ice cream. Yeah. Yay.
Oh, I'm sure there was some kind of – I know there was a – there were multiple crossovers at the time. I'm looking at a stack of my McDonald's glasses that actually Jason gave me. Although I had a bunch. I had a bunch at the time, but they all got thrown away.
Oh.
I remember Burger – well, I think it was for Lost World that Burger King had the watches.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and then the other, I mean, we're not going to go through all of the cast, but I have to mention Sam Neill because he has been in so many things that I've just absolutely dug. Like, I like him as an actor. There's another movie that of his, there's a lot of movies of his that I want to do episodes on, but there's one specific one. It was 92. It was him and Chevy Chase and Daryl Hannah, Memoirs of an Invisible Man. I love that movie.
John Carpenter.
That's the only John Carpenter movie I've really ever watched, and I love that movie.
Okay.
I don't know why.
That's one of the few that I've never seen.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
But yeah, Sam Neill, man, he's awesome. He's great. He was, Jurassic Park. There was another one. Oh, as you mentioned, he was Robert McLean in Horse Whisperer. Yeah, yeah. I'll tell him. So I read the book as a 15-year-old. It was because I don't know. It was, my mom liked horses. I was 15 and whatever. I read the book. So I read the book and I'm like, oh, okay. And then I come to find out there's a movie going to be made of the book. And I'm like, yeah, sometimes books are better than the movies. Sometimes movies improve a little bit on the books.
Rarely,
yes, I will agree. Very rarely, but yeah, in that case, the book was better than the movie. A lot more things happened in the book than happened in the movie. But he was also Sam Neill. He was Sir Richard Martin in 1999's Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams, where Robin Williams was Andrew the robot.
I mean, he was also in Event Horizon. Mm-hmm. He was in the Mouth of Madness, which is another John Carpenter one that's got a lot of H.P. Lovecraft influences.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find, I'm pretty sure he was in. Like early on, he had a bit. I believe he had a bit part in a movie with Steve Martin. I can't find it. And I might be misremembering, but he like stood out. That's why I'm like.
Yeah, he always. Oh my stands God! Out.
He was in Hunt for Red October. He was the guy that wanted to see Montana.
Yeah.
I would like to have seen Montana.
Yeah.
Aw. No, I'm sad. Oh, he was in Dead Calm.
Yeah, he's in Dead Calm. He's in a lot of stuff, man.
He has been in a lot of things.
He's an amazing, amazing actor. And then you look at his television credits. The same. That's what I miss about current Hollywood. I miss the actors and actresses that you never knew you knew that they were. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
Sam Neill. I've got like two or three frames of reference for him for various films that I've seen him in. But then I look at his filmography at his films and I'm like, oh, he was in this. He was in this. He was in this. I couldn't tell you who the hell was in what movie today unless it was a Marvel movie or whatever. But he played in 1998 on television. He was Merlin in the TV series Merlin. I love that show. I'm a big Arthurian guy. To some extent.
He was Damien in Omen 3 Final Conflict.
Yep.
Jeez. We're just playing with IMDb now, but.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. Yeah. It's just. Yeah, it's very, very fun. Very, very awesome. What else about the movie itself, about the plot, were you. All these years later, were you still captivated by the plot?
I mean, such as it is, it's very simple. The whole thing started because Crichton was really worried about people screwing around with genetic engineering, and rightfully so, I think.
Right.
And it was not the first time that Crichton has used a theme park as a vessel for his polemics about concerns about science. He also directed Westworld. The one with the robots that go crazy. And, like I said, there's not much. It's sort of like this guy creates for those of you who don't know, figures out a way to bring back dinosaurs. And it's a bad idea because stupid Malcolm is like weirdly psychic. And like one of the things that annoys me about the movie is all Malcolm has to do is run around going. Malcolm is Jeff Goldblum's character saying it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And then something goes wrong. And he's like, look, I'm a genius. because basically everything goes really in the movie particularly. Now in the book, there are a lot of things that are going wrong behind the scenes before Nedry shuts everything down.
Right.
In the movie, Nedry shuts everything down, and that's why everything goes to hell. It is very different in the book. Like there's this one scene in the movie where it probably seemed weird to you, where Grant finds some eggs.
Yes.
And just basically says amphibian DNA.
Yeah. They explain that, though.
Kind of. I mean, but like in the book, it's a bigger concern because dinosaurs are getting off the island. are breeding. Part of it is they're breeding, and the way the park keeps track of the animals is they programmed it dumb, so it only keeps track of the animals they expect to be there. Mm-hmm. So then they rejigger the parameters, and suddenly they realize they've got a lot more dinosaurs, mm-hmm. including velociraptors running around. Like in the movie, it really does boil down to Nedry screws everything up. And it is something that always kind of frustrated me about the entire premise, because in the book, particularly, Hammond keeps insisting that it's just a zoo. And I'm like, yeah, it is just a zoo. People could do zoos. Like, what? There's nothing magical about dinosaurs that, like, you can't possibly make a zoo out of them. Like, that's one of those irritating things. Like, oh, you can't possibly. I mean, there are issues, but it was just this idea that you just, you know. My problem is that, like, well, okay, one of the things that's interesting about the difference between the book and the movie is in the book, it's very clear this is a terrible idea. We should never do this. This is bad. Hammond is not a good guy. He's kind of a con artist. And then in the movie, you can tell that Spielberg is like, yeah, no, it's a bad idea, but it's really cool. But it's probably, you know, Hammond is more like Santa. He's a very charismatic, very lovable character. There's a whole different attitude towards, let's put on a big show. It's great. It's awesome. Oh, but it's also a very bad idea. Yeah, no. Very, very serious. Very, very bad idea.
It's a bad idea, right? Fuck it. It's fine.
Point being, that part kind of always annoyed me. My thing is, I don't really care about the plot. The plot is just a dinosaur delivery system. Like, it's just a system. It's a thrill ride. It is literally a thrill ride movie where once you get past all the blah, 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 talk, 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 you're hitting all the things. You're hitting all the dinosaurs. You know, it's like I said, it's the movie for me is more about scenes. It's the arrival of the island. It's the T-Rex attack. And then it's it's the ending with the velociraptors. And so that's more how I remember it rather than, you know, Grant's dumb character arc about how he learns to love children, even though Ellie dumps him anyway and has a kid with some other guy. Spoilers for Jurassic Park 3. And funny, in the book, she's not hooked up with him. She's actually a student, and she's gonna marry some other guy. Like, they added that to the movie. But it's also weird that he doesn't like kids. In the book, he likes kids because kids are big dinosaur fans. Like, Tim is chasing him around in the movie trying to get him to talk about dinosaurs.
Right. And
in the book, he's actually encouraging that conversation. Lex is a much younger kid in the book. I think they made her older partly so that she could be super computer genius at the end and save everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting changes they make for the movie, but yeah, it's just like, there's just to me, really the movie is three scenes. It's the opening, which I've already talked about, or the arrival of the island. The attack is amazing. The Tyrannosaurus breakout. Although it's weird. Like, I wonder how much of this stuff you picked up on that, like, people notice eventually after they think about it. The T-Rex comes through the fence, right? Yep. And he walks through the fence, and then he turns around and he pushes the smashed Jeep over the fence that he walked through to like a 50-foot drop.
Yeah. So how did he walk through the fence?
Yeah. Did you know? Yeah. Huh?
Yeah. No, that's not.
That's one that's always kind of crazy. And they don't even. They're like, look, we just figured. We just hope that people wouldn't notice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those. It's kind of like, that's one of those scenes where, like, if you, again, you've mentioned me and Transformers and everything else. I forget which episode it is, but in one of the Generation 1 episodes, I have the screenshot of it. It's a color error, but Optimus Prime is all blue, and he's like laser chained to the rock or whatever, but instead of being red in the color he's supposed to be, he's all blue. So this is essentially it's not a color error, but it's more of a scene error where, like you said.
Well, it's not even a scene error because it's what they meant to do. Yeah. It's just they just don't care.
It's like, we don't have enough money to turn this thing around. So I made it 50 minutes into the movie and I wrote down, I forgot the way movies used to be made. Because, well, seriously, you watch any, I don't care, any movie older than 15, anything before 2008, essentially, almost anything, you know, especially the, you know, from the 90s on back to the 50s, for like, movies were, man, just the where we've started and where we are now, it's a technological marvel how much movies have changed in, let's say, 100 years. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. The Dilophosaur or whatever the hell it is. The Jeep scene when he gets in the Jeep and he opens his little gills. I'm like, nope.
Well, then the question is, how did he get in there?
Exactly.
How did he get in there? And like, speaking as someone who owns the toys, how did he fit? Because I've tried to set that up, and like, the Dilophosaurus toy does not fit in the Jeep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then like, I will give like, to me, to give credit to Spielberg as a director, because this was Spielberg's year. If you think about it, 93 was Jurassic Park came out and was like the top box office movie of the world.
Yep.
And it was the year that Schindler's List came out. And he won the Oscar for that. Finally won the Oscar. And, you know, as a general rule, I'm a pretty cynical guy. I watch a lot of movies. So, like, you know, you kind of go into it going, well, they're not going to kill the kids, right? They're not going to kill the kids. And then there's that scene in the kitchen and the one Velociraptor comes in. And I'm like, okay, they'll outsmart the Velociraptor. They're not going to kill the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one comes in.
Yeah.
And the first time I saw that, my brain went, I don't know how this is going to, how are these kids going to survive? Like I know they don't kill them. Like, so he got me.
So before all that, when they were still doing the Jeep thing and the kids were being crushed in the Jeep.
Yeah.
He pulls the girl out.
Yeah.
He pulls Lex out. Tim's still in there. I thought after the Jeep fell off the thing and into the tree, I thought Tim was done. I didn't think he was going to get out of that Jeep. And then Sam gets whatever the fuck Sam Neill's character. Yeah. Okay, it's my middle name. I should remember that, you'd think.
As the Velociraptor said in Jurassic Park 3, Alan.
Mm-hmm. Wait, the Velociraptor talked?
The Velociraptor on the plane looks over at Alan. Alan looks over at the Velociraptor, and the Velociraptor says, Alan. Then you got to watch the third one, don't you?
No, I don't. Thank God. But when Alan climbs down and we see him in that weird angle of where Tim is in the Jeeps, like when he's checking on him to see if he's I really thought he was dead. Mm. I really thought the kid was dead there, but I'm glad he wasn't. And I'm glad the kid survived. I'm glad
he lived long enough to die in North Korea.
Oh, man.
Well, didn't you ever see G.I. Joe Retaliation?
Is it the second? Yeah, no,
Second one. The same actor. Yeah. The guy who played Tim, the kid who played Tim, he's Mouse in G.I. Joe Retaliation, and he gets killed off at the beginning.
Yeah, no, I've only ever seen the first one. I need to go back and watch the second.
Oh, the second one is weird. Like I always say, the first one has the scope of G.I. Mm-hmm. Joe, but it doesn't have the feel. The characters all feel wrong.
Right.
The second one has the characters feel more like G.I. Joe characters. But it ain't got no scope. It's like that's okay. The poor kid playing with his three G.I. Joes, you know?
Yeah.
Like the first one's the rich kid who doesn't really understand G.I. Joe, but he's got all the toys. And the second one's the poor kid who just basically has like two of them, you know? And it's like, rah. But he understands. He understands who they are. Like, so it's weird. Both those films are weird. Neither one have gotten. And then there is no third one. There is no Snake Eyes movie.
No, there's.
There's a movie about some asshole in Japan, but he's not Snake Eyes.
Really quickly, going back so I can close this one out for Crichton as an author. I didn't know Congo. He released that in 80. Like, I thought Congo was like, because I remember the movie version of Congo. But for Crichton, other than.
Yeah, well, I think the movie version was. No. I was going to say, Congo the movie is directly related like to Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park made money, and it was like, what has this guy written that we can turn into a movie?
Yep. Exactly. And that's where Disclosure comes in 1994 with Michael Douglas and Demi Moore. Those are the only two – between Jurassic Park and Disclosure were the only two Crichton novels I ever really knew. Obviously, I knew the other Jurassic Park novels, but back then as a kid –
There's
only one. Huh?
There's Jurassic Park and The Lost World. Crichton didn't do sequels. It's interesting. Crichton didn't do sequels, and Spielberg – I mean, yes, the Indiana Jones films were a series, but Spielberg never really did sequels to anything else.
Yeah.
And Lost World is the only sequel either of them really did. Yeah. Because I know I'm splitting hairs with Indiana Jones, but I consider that like a series, like James Bond.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, each movie doesn't really lead into the next movie.
Yeah.
They're kind of independent of each other, so it's not like a sequel.
Yeah.
Where he never did sequels, and because he never did E.T. He didn't do Jaws 2. He was going to do Jaws 2, but he didn't do Jaws. You know, mm-hmm. So it's Lost World is like the rare sequel that either of them really ever did.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, Crichton did ER. If you ever watched ER, he did that.
Oh, wow. That.
Yeah, the dude did Westworld, Andromeda Strain, Jurassic Park, Congo, ER, Disclosure. I mean, like, the dude was a machine.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of machines, Mr. Spielberg, oh my God. Like, be here all day going through this, but.
Well, I think our audience knows who Steven Spielberg is. I would hope that someone listening to the Geekcast Radio Network would have some vague idea.
But, like, even
people I know who, like, are super not nerds know who Steven Spielberg is.
Oh, 100%, because of Animaniacs and Tiny Toon Adventures. But, like, I forgot he did Catch Me If You Can from 2000.
I love Catch Me If You Can, yeah.
I love that movie.
And Williams has a great theme for that. It's a very cool, it's a very non-John Williams theme, and it fits very well.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think I just found the next episode Dave and I are going to do, because I forgot John Williams did that score.
Oh, yeah. What? Look.
I love the music, and I remember the music.
Williams is one of those guys who gets typecast as doing kind of a John, you know, I mean, we call it a John Williams type score, but he's incredibly talented. He's he can do other stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he's done so.
He's Spielberg's guy. Like directors have a composer that they like. I think, I don't know if he's still doing, but he did for a while there. He did every John or every Steven Spielberg movie. Mm-hmm. It's like I can't pronounce. Michael Giacchino does.
Giacchino,
Giacchino does J.J. Abrams stuff.
Yep, 100%. But yeah, I mean, going through Mr. Williams stuff is like, oh my God.
Goes so far back. Like we had the conductor of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra is like a friend of John Williams.
Mm-hmm.
So they did like a special concert on his birthday, which I got to go to.
Awesome.
And like he did he was doing Westerns, and of course, like they're amazing. Like, mm-hmm. But like, you know, like the concert started with these old timey Western things, and they were just like, it was all so cool. Like it's, you forget his range. You just, the man is just amazing.
He is. He absolutely is. I mean, he's done stuff, obviously, you know, I think you mentioned it before, but Towering Inferno is really I would say that's his, like, oh my God, breakout kind of thing, like where people probably, but then, you know, you go into Jaws and you go into all Star Wars. I'm not going to go through all of them, but all Star Wars, Close Encounters, Superman, you know, 1941 E.T., but just, man, just Empire of the Sun, Indiana Jones. Oh, I love the music in Hook. Hook is
the music. Has good music, yeah.
Yes.
Well, 1941 has a great theme too.
Yeah, it does.
It's amazing.
I know people are gonna just roll their eyes at me for this one, but the only two that really exist, the Home Alone movies, Home Alone 1, and then the second one, Lost in New York. I love the way he does the music for when Kevin is sneaking around doing stuff. That's so awesome. And yeah, man, he did the music for 1998 Stepmom with Julia Roberts and Susan Sarandon. Yes. Yeah. Like, oh man, just.
Well, he's a composer. Composers work, man.
Oh no, absolutely.
No,
But it's like, oh my God, this guy has done so much in this entire, just, oof. All of it, like, just so good. And we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into John Williams later on in 2024, folks, when Dave and I end up doing Star Wars music here on the podcast, because holy crap, there's a lot. So anything else we need to say about Jurassic Park? We kind of went all over the map there, but.
Well, I've heard it's very frightening in the dark. All the dinosaurs are running wild.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always get that wrong. I always get the line wrong, because I always want to say someone let T-Rex out in the rain, but that's not actually how it works in the Weird Al song. It's weird. Like, I think people think that I like the movie more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like I said, there are sequences that I love. I think the movie overall is okay. Like, I think it's well directed. You know, it's got a great cast, but there's a lot of sort of sitting around talking.
Yeah.
It's interesting that David Kopp, the guy who wrote the screenplay, he came up with a mantra for the sequel, which is kind of like one of my mantras as a writer, which is he felt like it took too long to get to the island. So that's my thing. It's like, get to the island. And yeah, the first one takes a little too long to get to the island. It takes a little too long of, you know, where we meet the guy who's digging the amber. We have the scene at the dig site. Now, one thing I do love about the movie is there's a lot of clever storytelling. Like when Grant confronts the fat kid at the dig site, like, yep, I say, because I'm overweight, and he's kind of spooking him and messing with him, you know, and tell him. But that's exactly what happens to Muldoon at the end, right? It's yeah, foreshadowing what happens to Muldoon. Is, you know, you see the one in front of you and you don't see the one at the side. You know, there's a scene. One of the small things I really love is when they're coming to the island and the helicopter's dropping and everybody's putting on their seatbelts, and Grant's seatbelt is messed up. It's got two like receivers, not the plug. Mm-hmm. And like everybody's making a fuss about it. And then he just ties them together. Right. I love that scene because that scene conveys so much information. Number one, the InGen helicopter is flawed. Right. It's got a screwed up seatbelt, which tells you that InGen itself kind of makes mistakes, which is a crucial thing. And it also tells you that Grant is a very resourceful, like, instead of panicking or trying to figure something out, he just ties them together. He's a resourceful guy. It conveys all that information without any real dialogue. And we learn so much from what seems like a cute little joke. And like you're saying, I don't think movies do that anymore.
No, they don't.
And the last thing I will talk about is the one thing I really hate in the film is Nedry hits the sign to the docks and crashes his car. Yeah. He picks up the sign and the arrow is on a wheel.
Yeah.
How would that ever be useful in any scenario? How would it be useful to have a sign where the wheel is on a wheel? Like any random kid could spin it around. Yeah. That's so stupid.
Yeah. That scene makes no sense. Like him crashing into the sign makes sense. But what he does doesn't make sense because it never comes back to that. They're not going to, he's the only one going to the docks. They aren't going to the docks. Like they aren't chasing him. He has the meetup, supposed to have the meetup at the docks to give the embryos and blah, 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 blah. It's not like the heroes of the movie are chasing the villain there. They're not at all.
Well, they don't even know he's gone yet.
Right, exactly. That's my point.
No, but what I'm saying is he picks up the sign to look at where the arrow's pointing, and it's on a wheel.
Yeah, like, no, yeah.
So that he can't figure out where to go. And it's just like, that makes no design. That bugs me. And the other thing that bugs me is how everybody just abandons the island.
Yeah.
Except for like the five main characters, right? Yep. It's like, oh, everybody leave the island. Like, well, computers and these dinosaurs, yeah, just all go.
Well, that's part of the thing in the film, I think, isn't it? It's they say it from the onset. As soon as they get to the island, as soon as they get to the scientists, everybody must be on the boat back to the mainland for the end of business day. Like they say that, and I'm just like, okay. And
but yet, why?
Well,
I mean, these dinosaurs cost a lot of money, and you're just going to abandon the entire island, like, and leave four people. That's stupid. That's not how you. It's not how you run a business. Like, because, and they've established that they have a bunker because they go down to the bunker later.
Yeah.
So like, why, because if it's the storm, why wouldn't you ride up the storm in the bunker? But no, you know, there's computers, there's equipment, there are dinosaurs that cost millions of dollars to create each one. Like, that's a big plot point in the book is Hammond won't let anything happen to the dinosaurs because they cost too much. They cost a fortune. But it's just like, well, we need to eliminate all the background characters. So let's just all go on a boat. Let's just get rid of everybody. And by the way, this is a really important weekend because these guys will determine whether or not the Jurassic Park gets to keep running. So let's just all get on a boat and leave. Okay. And of course, this is the movie that for those of you, for the handful of you that ever followed our podcast, my podcast with Jason, gave us Chili and Sea Bass.
That's right.
Alejandro, the chef, Chilean sea bass. And then Jason's like, why would you have Chilean sea bass? So this is the movie with Chilean sea bass. And it actually, a sad consequence of this movie is that that got like heavily overfished. because of the movie, because it became a thing. People heard of the Chilean sea bass, so
and they wanted it.
Which is weird because it was a junk fish that nobody wanted, and suddenly it got overfished. So,
well, that's the thing about movies or TV shows. Hell, even saw, like, think of everybody that Eminem used to put in his songs. You would then want to go find those people, not find them in real, but like Carson Daly and Christina Aguilera. You hear something mentioned somewhere, you may want to, let me, you know, that kind of thing.
And famously, the 101 Dalmatians, like people would go and adopt Dalmatians after that movie came out. And it was a problem because Dalmatians are actually a somewhat difficult dog to handle. They're very high strung. Yeah. So people, you know, it was a very sad story. People would adopt Dalmatians and then like kind of get rid of them, you know, dump them off the shelter because they're not great pet dogs, or they're not great family dogs. So yeah, like it's not exactly the Streisand effect, but it's kind of like the Streisand effect. There probably is a proper name for it, but but yeah, it's a good film. I'm glad that you saw it. I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I will put my cards on the table. I like the next film, Lost World.
Okay.
I'm not going to push you to watch it. It's one of those that nobody seems to like it but me. So, like, I like it. There are two T-Rexes, and they murder the shit out of Toby Ziegler. Which is the best sequence ever. And then they actually get to the mainland, like, and have stuff. I like the second movie. Third movie gets pretty dumb. And then the Jurassic World movies exist.
Okay.
I love, like, maybe the first 20 minutes of Jurassic World when the park is actually open and functioning. It makes me happy to my soul. And then the movie starts. And then the plot starts, and it's like, oh. And then they don't get better from there.
Oh, no. That's not good.
No. They're dumb.
Well, that's not good at all. All right, folks. I think before we go to a quick break, 0 to 5, what are you going to give Jurassic Park?
It's a skewed score. I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
It's skewed because I love, like, the stuff I love so much, but I really feel like the film overall probably deserves a 3 because I think it's competent, it's well done, but just those highlights are so high for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3.5. I very much enjoyed it. I didn't know if I was going to enjoy it. I could do without some of the jump scare bits, but that's just my own personal whatever. It is what it is, but you need those in the movie and all that. But overall, it's probably not a movie I'm going to go back and watch anytime soon, but I enjoyed the experience of experiencing it for the first time without really having, like I mentioned earlier in the last hour or so, I've known about the Dr. Ian Malcolm memes for years. So, you know, it is what it is. As Dave mentioned earlier, you can go. I think you can still go and listen to all of his and Jason's old podcast, Dave and Duvall's Toys and Collectibles, over on toyworldorder.com. We are going to take a quick ad break, and then we'll come back to close the show right after this.
Kid.
Yes.
Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe. From the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film, Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth in Beyond the Night, only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Get.
Yes, Michael.
Just keep driving.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Well, the Marku 42's Universe podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Marku 42's Universe podcast from the universe and beyond.
Hey, it's Wes from Poppin' Off Toys. Wanted to let you know about poppinoffToys.com. We can be your number one source for Funko collectible figures to add to your ever-growing collection. If you're in Nashville, Tennessee, we actually have a retail store that you can come by, 5916 Charlotte Pike. And for the rest of us, poppinoffToys.com is always open, and you can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and even TikTok. And the name is just simply Popping Off Toys. Thank you so much, and always keep it popping.
We are back here inside Studio 2009. Any final thoughts, Mr. Draper, sir?
No, I think it's a good movie. It's an okay movie. It's a great thrill ride, is what I would say. I also like it gets credit for changing the population's view on dinosaurs. Scientifically, people kind of knew, the paleontology community kind of knew that dinosaurs were more active. You know, they weren't the lumbering giants of traditional media presentation, but I think for the general population it was kind of it was a revelation that these things were fast, they were warm-blooded, you know, they weren't just kind of like lizards dragging themselves around. I don't know. I'm glad it got made. I enjoyed it. I'm glad that you liked it. You know, because I'm not that kind of person of like, oh, watch this movie, you're gonna think it sucks. Ha ha ha. you know, and also I'm glad you liked it because I think that means it kind of holds up. You know, because like I said at the beginning, we do live in this world where like the special effects can do anything now.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that you kind of, you know, not that you loved it, but that you liked it, I think says that there's something to story. There's something to good directing and story and acting that allows a movie to hold up more than the visuals being like on point per se.
Yeah.
Even though the visuals, the weird thing is the visuals are more on point in that film from 1993 than they are in a lot of movies that are released now. And there's a reason for that. Which is that back in the day, they literally put more effort into it. They spent more money on it, where like now it's just like slap it out and get it out.
Well, that, and we had some computing power back then, but we didn't have a lot of computing power back then, and most of it was practical effects. And nowadays, people will just go to a computer and create a CAD model or a 3D render or whatever. Bob's your uncle. There you go.
I'm glad I talked you into this because I was morally offended that you're making a bigger deal out of Robin Hood Men in Tights than Jurassic Park. That irritated me to no end. I'm like, really?
It's like the
Mel Brooks movie based on that one stupid Kevin Costner film. Like, really?
Robin Hood's been around for a long time, though.
Okay, but like isn't Men in Tights, basically just Prince of Thieves?
It's kind of pretty
like,
much.
Like, yeah. Like Young Frankenstein is like all the old Universal Frankenstein movies. Mm-hmm. You know, High Anxiety is all the Hitchcock films. Blazing Saddles is all the Westerns. Like, even Spaceballs is very multiple science fiction things. I mean, they've got the crack about Alien. It's got all these jokes from all the other, and then Men in Tights is basically that Kevin Costner Robin Hood film.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I wasn't trying to make a bigger
deal. You absolutely were.
No, I was not.
You were saying it's a more important film in the history of civilization than some dumb Steven Spielberg film. You absolutely were. I remember that perfectly.
He's putting words into my mouth.
I'm absolutely
not what I said. I said at the time
that I spit on Jurassic Park. It is not worthy of wiping Lincoln's shoes.
Yeah. So speaking of another film from 1993 featuring a dinosaur, Yoshi in Super Mario Bros.
Oh my god. That's somebody else's mission gosh, man. I'm aware of it. I've never actually seen it. I do know that the people who did Max Headroom, yeah, I keep wanting to say Maximum Overdrive. I know that the people who did Max Headroom made it, which is weird to me. Like that's one that's more. I think the more interesting story is the making of that film than the film itself. Mm-hmm. Well, because they got the guys who did Max Headroom to do a fucking Mario Brothers movie.
Yep.
like there was a lot of drugs floating around. I think we had officially transitioned from cocaine to some mushrooms or something.
Probably.
Which is appropriate.
But no, I just I know
Jason and I went through like on, because this is a weird thing that friends do when we're alone. We actually like spent a night going through IMDb for 1993 and going through all the movies that came out that year, and it was kind of crazy. It was kind of impressive, the stuff that came out that year.
Yeah, 1993 was a awesome year for movies, and the funny thing is, other than Alan Silvestri, who did the music in the Super Mario Brothers movie, I recognize none of the names for the director, the writers, all of that. The only thing I recognize is the music and the cast. And it's what it is.
They did Max Headroom.
Yep. All right, folks. That's going to do it for us. I think next time around, we are going to be doing another anniversary, the 20th anniversary of Ben Affleck, Uma Thurman. What's his name? He played Dent in the Batman. Aaron Eckhart.
Aaron Eckhart.
2004's Paycheck. So reverse engineering. Oh my God. Yes, that's 20 years old next year.
I'm just like somebody or actually remembered that existed.
Oh, I love that movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that movie for basically one line, really. But I love the movie in general. I think it's a good... You don't see a lot of reverse engineering films. And when Affleck is making sure that Uma's character is who she says she is, he asks her, "What's my favorite baseball team?" That would be the Boston Red Sox. So yes, that's coming up here inside Studio 2009. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like to get in contact with us, leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website where you can listen to and comment on all of our content, geekcastradio.com. Shoot us email, feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can catch us on any of the podcatching clients you choose to use, Apple, Google, Spotify, whatever. You can follow us on social media. The network's pretty much everywhere. I'm pretty much everywhere. Dave's on
nowhere.
Yeah, he's
don't even look.
Yeah, okay. As I mentioned, okay, Mr. Raptor.
I will. Okay, one more minor nerd point about Jurassic Park.
Yes.
It doesn't really make me angry, but it's so. There's a dinosaur called Deinonychus. And basically, it's like a velociraptor. And the Deinonychus is important because it was really the dinosaur that made scientists realize that dinosaurs were more like birds, that they were more active because it was a small predator. And, like, it had to be quick and agile in order to be able to eat, right?
Right.
Tyrannosaurus rex is huge. It's obviously going to kill whatever it goes after. But these quick little nimble bird-like animals had to have a more bird-like metabolism. And for a while in the 80s, at least in paleontology circles, they were kind of famous. They were celebrated. This was the dinosaur that basically said, you gotta. And Velociraptor was one of those kind of dinosaurs. I mean, it was a variation of it that lived in Mongolia. And there's a very famous skeleton of a Velociraptor fighting another dinosaur, and they died, and they got fossilized. But the Deinonychus was the more famous one. Mm-hmm. And then Crichton wrote Jurassic Park, and then Spielberg made Jurassic Park. But there's a scene at the very beginning of the book when the guy who gets wounded is brought into a hospital on the mainland, and he's mumbling because he's dying, and he says "Velociraptor," and the whole thing is he used a Velociraptor instead of a Deinonychus so that there could be a moment that the doctor opens up a book and reads that raptor translates to bird of prey. And so Velociraptors kind of came in, kind of swooped in and stole Deinonychus' credit, you know, and like everybody knows what a Velociraptor is, but nobody remembers what the Deinonychus is, you know. Mm-hmm. So they stole their glory. Creighton and Spielberg kind of stole Deinonychus' glory by a big, and then the Velociraptors were the wrong size in the movie. They were, as I mentioned, they made them big.
Yeah.
Although ironically, when they were filming the movie, they found something called a Utah raptor in Utah, which mm-hmm. was a raptor about that size. So they're like, see, it's legitimate. It's legit science. Yeah. But still on the Dilophosaurus. It doesn't exist. So I always love knockoff toys that have the frills, because you're like, yeah, you're actually stealing. Like, that's not, you're not just copying a dinosaur. That's stealing a fictional creature they made up for that movie. Okay, I'll stop being a nerd now.
No, it's awesome.
I went to Chicago last weekend, and I went to the Field Museum twice.
Like you do.
Like I do.
Yep. So do T-Rexes have feathers or not?
No, apparently they have fluff. Okay. Like a chick.
Right.
You know, like a baby chick?
Yep.
So they look really stupid. they look like an Easter chick with like a Tyrannosaur head poking out. Mm-hmm. It's just the pictures I've seen are terrible. But yeah, apparently they supposed to have fluff. I know they found raptor skeletons or they found skeletons with feathers for those. Almost mm-hmm. any kind of like predatory dinosaur probably had feathers, particularly in the Cretaceous.
Mm. Well, that was the other thing I was going to mention really before we close this out finally. The movie is, I love how they mix the old school methods of finding the dinosaur skeletons and the new school where it's like, yeah, let's just drop a mine into the ground and explode it out. I'm like,
it's not a mine, it's a shotgun. It's a shotgun shell that they shoot into a plate, and that causes vibrations, and then they reach with a sonar. They don't drop them. They don't drop a mine into the ground. Jesus Christ. It's a shotgun shell.
Yeah, it's an explosive charge.
Not an explosive charge. It's a shotgun shell. They put it in the thing, and they go, boom, and it hits a plate. So it's not, they're not shooting it into the ground.
It just reminds me of when I saw that, I was like, hey, I wonder if that's where Gideon Reeves got that idea. There was a very short, it only got one season. There was a Fox show called APB back in 2017. And it had Justin Kirk as the lead billionaire. And part of his technology thing was he invented these drones that could basically destroy landmines by, less lethal means, even though it's an explosive. Anyway, join us next time for Paycheck and whatever else is coming up here at the end of the year in December here inside Studio 2009 only on the Geekcast Radio Network. For now, I am TFG and Mike with
David Draper.
You'll hear us back in the studio soon.
What more need be said?
Thank you for joining us inside the studio. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send an email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple, Google Podcasts, leave us reviews, please. Spotify, and any other podcatching client you choose to use. Follow us on X at Geekcast Radio for the network, at It's Studio 2009 for the show. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast Radio Network and Studio 2009 Podcast over there as well. Join us next time when we'll be talking about something in the audio or visual realm here inside Studio 2009, only on the Geekcast Radio Network.